Okay, I think we might get started. I think it's 9:45 now, isn't it? So we're good to go? Great. Okay. Well, thanks for coming along. We've got a nice big room. Echo. Just to make sure everyone's in the right place, this session, and the slides are working, this session's about Windows IoT Core, the Universal Windows Platform, and the Remote Wiring API, and a smattering of a few other things that you might need to know along the way. So we're going to build up a bit of a scenario here, but before I get started, I thought I might do a bit of a level set and just find out where people are on their IoT journey. So who's a professional software developer in the audience? Okay, cool. So what about people whose job it is to write, you know, professionally firmware for components? One or two. Okay, that's good. That's good because you guys that put your hand up, you know way more about that stuff than I do. Right? I'm a software guy myself, and I'm interested in IoT because I'm interested in what you can do with the data that you collect from the devices. And I'm in the, you know, I've got some sensors and bits and pieces up here because I'm really interested in the end-to-end scenario, and I like to play with the technology. And so this session's good for people that are just getting started in that space. And want to sort of get some of the signposts. And so I thought I might start with just a couple of, you know, the top five challenges around working in the IoT space before we go any further and get into the real content. So top five challenges in IoT. The first one is actually getting your hands around just the basic fundamentals of electronics. I'm not an electrical engineer. I didn't go and study electrical engineering at university, although I know a lot of software people did. So you guys would have a pretty good handle on that. And so when you're getting started in this space, it's actually worth going and doing some of those online courses around that kind of stuff. Because when it comes to debugging things, knowing how to use a multimeter, knowing how to use an oscilloscope, knowing how to use various you know, function generators and stuff will help you greatly in designing circuits and debugging things. The fourth most popular challenge from my point of view is encouraging kids not to touch your desk at work, at home. Right? Well, my wife is more about complaining about the state of my desk because I've got these little scraps of wires all over it. But my son, I was playing with one of these sensors and I had it plugged into a USB power source, so like a battery, and the USB power source has got a little torch on it, and so he liked playing with the torch, so he saw it there and grabbed it, and my wiring just went straight off the desk. And of course, you know, sometimes there are exposed wires around, but hopefully you're not playing with anything that's sufficiently high current to cause any real damage. Getting onto that, you need to deal with smoke in your office when you let the smoke out of the components you're developing. You know, learn how to turn off your smoke detector, or at least reset it. It's a good tip. The second problem is dealing with shape-shifting robots from the future, right? At some point, you have to know that that last wire you plug in is going to mean the end of everything, right? So just be careful. And the number one challenge is developing a special relationship with airport security as you try to carry these things around the country on airplanes. You know, this device that I'm going to be demoing with today looks a little bit suspicious in your luggage. I've taken this into the US, and I was afraid of actually being escorted off the plane at one point. So fortunately, I haven't had any problems. That's right. The police are currently looking for me. Okay, so let's get on to the session and have a bit of a walk through what we're going to cover. When I work with IoT problems, I like to have a bit of a toy problem to work with. It's fine to just make something work, but you know, let's develop a bit of a scenario so we've got a bit of a goal. And if you're going to be doing this from a hobbyist point of view, you might have some simple things you want to automate at home, simple things you want to hook up. So it's good to do that. Helps focus your efforts. So my scenario is a tanker monitoring scenario. This could be a water tank on a farm, or it could even be a diesel tank, so monitoring diesel levels and reporting it back to a central location. And what we want to do is do that monitoring and feed it back into the cloud as in the overall solution. So there's a couple of components in what we're developing. The first one is a sensor, and I'll talk about what I've got here on my desk in a moment. But often sensors are pretty dumb, right? Some sensors can connect directly to the cloud, but a lot of sensors don't have that extended reach into the cloud, or they don't have the capabilities to talk the various protocols required to talk to the secure cloud backends. And so you need some kind of other device to act as a gateway. So I've got a device here that's going to act as a gateway. And then you need the backend that receives the data and presents it to the user and drives some sort of automation or decision making. And so we're going to look at Azure IoT Suite for that. So let's have a look at the sensor. This diagram is a pretty version of what this ugly thing looks like. Okay. Although I've noticed that this actually has an error. Okay. Anyone want to spot the error in the 15 seconds you've had to look at it? No. So the problem is that there's actually no power going to the ultrasonic sensor in this diagram. It was a mistake in this diagram they got. So I thought I'm going to leave it in there because it's a good opportunity to show you some of the tools you can use to document the designs of what you're constructing. Because if you're going to go and buy these components and build them, you might even publish how you've done it online in your blog or something like that. Well, you need some way of visually presenting your wiring. And so I use a tool called Fritzing. It's free to download. I think you can donate for the maintenance of the software. It's quite useful, and a lot of people in the maker community use it. And so what I'll do is I'll jump into Fritzing to get it working. So sorry? Yeah, I didn't draw the power into the Arduino. No, you're absolutely correct. So without power, it isn't going to go very far. Okay, so what I've got here is two diagrams, and I've got two sensors on my desk here. They're actually both wired ever so slightly differently. I'm going to look at this first one here, and I apologize for the size of that font because you can't resize it in this tool very easily, but we won't need to look at it for very long. Okay, so this is the same diagram that we saw previously. And what you can do here is you can grab a pin on the breadboard, and you can just draw wires from pins and between backwards and forwards between components. So if I wanted to hook something onto this, I could. And then just to document your diagrams, I like to use colors to indicate what the wires are for. So, for example, the red and the black wires are your power supply. So here we've got positive and negative terminals for the, so it's a 5-volt feed there going into the ultrasonic sensor, and that's your ground. And then I use the yellow and blue wires for signal wires. And so here in this particular component, I've actually got an ultrasonic sensor, a Bluetooth serial modem, and an Arduino. So once you've designed your diagram, one of the great things about using this tool is that you can actually generate a schematic from it. Okay, so design it in a pretty diagram here, generate a schematic, and if you've got the time, you can even get it to generate a PCB layout, which you can then send off to a third party to get printed. So if you then wanted to get your design down onto a piece of hardware, you could just slap on top of an Arduino or a Raspberry Pi, you can do that. There are a couple of different tools that do this kind of thing. This is just one that I happen to use. To be honest, I've never gone to the effort of producing a PCB, but I've certainly used this to produce diagrams to help explain what I'm doing. Okay. Okay, so that's the sensor design. And so, useful tool, Fritzing. Go and look it up, download it, design away. The good thing about Fritzing is it's got a catalogue of various components that you can actually search for. So if I search for, an Arduino Uno, well then it'll give me that, and as I drag it on, it'll just render it. And you can actually build your own components as well. They're just SVG files with a little bit of metadata. So it's quite a clever little tool. So we've used Fritzing. So the next thing we're going to be dealing with is the Arduino. And whilst this session isn't specifically about Arduinos themselves, we're going to be talking about the remote wiring API, which is specifically designed to work with Arduino devices or devices that can run the Fermata protocol. So we need to understand a little bit about what Arduino is. So an Arduino is an embedded microcontroller. It comes in lots of different flavors. You can get ones that are sort of the size of a credit card. You can get ones that are sort of about one-fifth that size. And you can even get ones that are small enough to be stitched into fabric as wearables. So it's quite a versatile platform. And what you can do is you can push some compiled C code onto that device, and that code then drives the various GPIO terminals or analog terminals on that device. But the structure of every single Arduino sketch, as they're called, is the same. You have a single function called setup, which runs once at each power cycle or reset cycle of the device. And then you have a loop method, which is called continuously. So it runs, ends, runs again. And so that is the basic backbone of a piece of Arduino code. So let's have a look at the way that we can do that. So if you're getting started with Arduino, there's a couple of different IDEs out there for working with it. I'm going to show you the one that's the most popular, which is the Arduino IDE. And the way this works is that, and you can sort of see the common code there, the way this works is you just literally type in the program code you want to run. So for example, let's say I wanted to, in this particular device here, so I'll just show you that. So this is an Arduino here, up there on the board, on the screen. And I've got some other circuitry plugged into it. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to deploy a custom sketch to this, which is just going to blink an LED just on and off continuously. A really simple sketch. And hopefully we'll be able to see that just by twisting it around the right way in there. Should be able to see it in there somewhere. Okay, so let's write the code. The first thing we need to do is figure out which pin on the Arduino we're going to turn on and off. Now, it just so happens that built into the Arduino board is an LED on pin 13. Oop. Oop. There we go. Okay. So we've got an onboard LED, which is pin number 13, okay? And then what I'm going to do is, just to set things up, I'm going to push it down to low power, basically turn off the power going through to the LED. And then in this loop here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it on and turn it off, turn it on, turn it off. It's just going to loop continuously. So and the thing we need to deal with here is figuring out which Arduino we're going to push this to, because I've got both plugged in at the moment. So I'm going to do myself a favor and just unplug one of these, because I can't remember what COM ports they're on. And I was saying to a few people in this session that if something fails here, it's just going to add to the fun. Okay, so I've got an Arduino sitting here on COM 3 by the looks of it. And I should be able to upload that sketch now. Okay, looks like it's working, looks like it's uploading. Done uploading. Okay, so now, is it running? What have I done wrong here? Yes. Okay, so the GPIO pins can sort of, you can read or write the signal that's coming in on them. You can do things like read like a pulse width modulated signal as well, which I actually do for these sensors. But yeah, you've got to make sure that you're setting it up for output if you're going to be pushing the LED. So I'll upload that sketch again. And It's looking good. Okay, so I'll switch across to the... So this will be a little bit tricky to see. Can you see the LED flashing in there? Okay, so that's like your Hello World sketch for Arduino, right? That's all it is. So obviously we're going to get a little bit more advanced than that, but this is just kind of level setting, making sure everyone's familiar with the basic tools. So one of the things that I like to do when I'm developing projects is I kind of like to keep my source code together. So one of the things about jumping backwards and forwards between the Arduino IDE and Visual Studio is you kind of lose track of where your code is and what's checked in and so on. So there's actually a third-party tool that you can use. I actually didn't know about this tool until a couple of weeks ago, and since then I went and bought it. I think there's a free trial version and stuff as well, but I actually went and bought it because I was using it quite a bit, and it actually brings in the ability to develop sketches in Visual Studio and publish them directly out, and even do things like debugging of your Arduino sketches remotely. It's actually really quite clever. So I'll show that as well. So inside Visual Studio, I have to remember to keep doing that. Okay. So inside Visual Studio, what I've got here is a solution. And the solution's got a couple of C# projects, and they're just the IoT components for Windows that I've developed. But I've also got these other projects. They're kind of like C projects. Now, if I go in there, you can see that... I'll go into this configure modem one. That we've got an Arduino sketch in there, and it's pretty much the same structure. We've got a setup and a loop, so it is exactly the same code. But what I can actually do is press this run button, and it'll actually deploy that onto the device and run it. And I can even do things like set breakpoints. So if I set a breakpoint here and then click deploy, the highlighting is a little bit different. Visual Micro. Oop. So one thing you've got to do, and this catches me out all the time, is you've got to make sure you set the start project correctly for this button to work. So now that's compiling it, and it's going to deploy it to the device. And this is something that's used to configure the modem. And you can see it started. It gives me a COM port monitor. It gives me some information on the device. You can see down the bottom here that configure modem is paused at line 14. So it actually gives me the ability to sort of step through the sketch. So that's a really useful tool if you're actually working with Arduino for the first time. It can be a little bit finicky. There's a few things that can catch you out doing this, but in terms of just some basic debugging steps, it's very worthwhile. Highly recommended. And what this sketch does is actually configure the Bluetooth modem. So I have on the Arduino here, I've got wired into pin 8 and 9 a Bluetooth serial modem. And then what I do in the setup is I send through a sequence of commands to appropriately set the default baud rate on the device. So when I get into working with this device remotely from my Windows PC, it's all configured correctly. And you'll see that I've got some sketches that I upload to the device that do this all for you automatically as well. Okay. So now that we've got our device sort of set up, or that we've got sort of fundamentals of what's running on the device, actually, what I haven't shown you is how I drive the sensor. So let me jump back into Visual Studio and show you the actual firmware code. So if I look at this sensor here, this sensor that I've got on my desk here, I've got a sketch that I'm going to deploy onto it. And what I do is two things. First of all, I configure the ultrasonic sensor. It doesn't require much configuration. It just needs the output direction on the pin set up correctly. And then I configure the Bluetooth modem, which does that configuration step, which I highlighted previously. And then all I do is, in a loop, I read the distance using the ultrasonic sensor. And the way that works is I send a pulse down a trigger pin for 10 microseconds, then drop it low again, and then I listen for a pulse with modulated signal coming back from the ultrasonic sensor on another pin. And based on the duration of that pulse, I can actually calculate the distance between the top of the ultrasonic sensor and the material in the device. So if I look at my my setup here on the desk, what I've got is an Arduino, and on the top here I've got the ultrasonic sensor. So this is it's an ultrasonic sensor. It's a little cheap little thing. And then I've got a container here with some liquid in it, and so this actually drops the ultrasonic ping down into the container and measures the distance from the top of the sensor to the surface of the liquid, and then it will send that over Bluetooth. And we'll check that out shortly. Any questions so far? Covering a bit of territory here. Okay, so we've got our sensor, we've got some firmware that runs on it, and I've handwritten that firmware, so I've just got a custom protocol where that when that thing's connected to Bluetooth, it's just going to spew out the distance. So now we need to figure out how we're actually going to consume that data that this device is presenting, because this thing isn't connected to the internet, it's just connected via Bluetooth. And so we're going to use the Universal Windows platform, and the Universal Windows platform has a set of Bluetooth APIs which actually allow me to connect to a Bluetooth serial port and just receive the data coming in from it. So what I thought I would do is just walk through some of the code involved there. Okay. Okay. Keep on accidentally opening things. Okay, so what I've got here is a Windows application. And inside that Windows application, it's a really simple UWP application. It's just got a main page. And just when the application starts, it spins off an operation in the background to get some readings via Bluetooth. Or it will, because I haven't written that code yet. And so I'm going to do that with you. So I've got some cheat code here I can paste in here if I need it, but I just thought I would walk through your basic code for getting this working and point out a few pitfalls. So the first thing that we need to do is we actually need to discover all the devices that this PC knows about which are capable of presenting a serial port. Okay, so there's the discovery process in Bluetooth. So I can say, give me the devices, and this is async code, where the device information... device information, find all async, and then what I can do is specify what kind of service I'm actually looking for. So if I do that, RFCOM service ID, serial port. Okay, so what this is saying is find me all the devices which present a serial port service. Now, this actually won't see anything unless this device is actually paired with the PC. So you're probably all familiar with the Bluetooth pairing process in Windows. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to swipe in here and go into settings. I've already paired this up, but I just wanted to show you where this is set. So you can see here that I've got two Bluetooth devices here, one for each sensor that I've got on the desk. This is the one that we're working with, and it's already paired. Okay? So you've got to make sure you do that before these APIs will work. And even when you do that, the first time you actually access this device and try to work with it, it will actually present a request to give authorization to the application to use it. Okay? So once we've got that, we then need to actually get the serial port service itself. So get the service. And there we go, await. I've got to get the device. So I'll go var device equals device devices. Get a single device where the device name is RNBT, 9A57. There we go. So basically, if that device isn't paired, this is going to blow up. But obviously, you wouldn't hard code this stuff normally. But just for the purposes of this, and two equals. Okay, so we've got the device. So now we need to get the service. And we can get the service from the particular ID of the device. So if we go device.id, there we go. And then once we've got that service, we've now got the necessary components to start communicating to this over a serial port. And the way that this works in UWP is you get a kind of an input stream and an output stream, and you can attach readers to both of them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say using var socket. So we've got to actually initiate the socket. And then once we've got the socket, I'm going to connect it to the service. So connect async. And then you've got to get these values correct. So you've got a host name you're connecting to, that you've got a service name that you're connecting to, and then you've got protection level. So I'm just going to allow null encryption for this particular demo. And then once you've got that socket, it presents a stream that you now put into a stream reader. So you go var reader equals new data reader, and you go socket input stream. Okay, so that's the data that's coming from the device. And once you've done that, you can say, okay, well, just continuously in a loop, and if you're doing this for production, you have a cancellation token here that does all this for you, but let's get the distance reading, and let's get that out of the reader. And then once you've got that distance, we're going to update a text box on the user interface. So we're running this on a background thread, so we actually need to marshal that request onto that foreground thread. And there's actually a mistake in this code, which I'll have to come back and explain to you as well, which will catch you out the first time you start working with this stuff. Okay. Isn't async code wonderful? Okay, so that's your basic harness for getting that. So I've just what I've got hidden down here is a method which basically bites off one character of that stream that's coming back at a time looking for a delimiter. Once it encounters the delimiter, it returns the buffered string that it's got previously. So that's all that method's actually doing. It's just chewing off the data that's coming back from the device. So now that we've got that, we should be ready to go. There's a gotcha which, if I run this code, it may not actually be a problem because I've already prepared the device and this app has authorization to work with it. But this method here actually can potentially present a user interface to the user, allowing the user to grant permission to access that Bluetooth device that's previously been paired. If you don't throw that onto the UI thread, it will crash. Okay? It just so happens I've prepared, so unless my pairings become disconnected in what I've been doing here so far, it'll probably still work. But just keep in mind that often those operations you need to run on the UI thread. And that's also true for the Raspberry Pi that we're going to use as a gateway. But there's other ways of getting around that on this particular device. So now, let's run this code and see whether the sensor works. And see whether I've broken my code at all. Okay. So one thing that I'm just waiting for it to happen. Anything could go wrong here. Something has gone wrong here. Okay. No data is available. Okay. I had this problem. So the code that I uploaded to this sketch previously, we're at the blink the LED. So I said to a few people that if something goes wrong, I'm going to have to debug it. Okay, so what's happening here is I uploaded the sketch that contains the blinking LED. Now I'm going to replace that with the sketch which contains my custom firmware to return the distance reading. So if I go into this project and I deploy that code, okay, so that's deployed. Okay, so I'm just going to disconnect from that because I don't want anything to interrupt. And so now I jump back to my custom protocol. Hit start. So what was happening there is that the device, hopefully it's all going to work now. Let's wait for it to connect. No, it's blowing up. No, okay, so what I'll just do is I'll power cycle the Arduino. Sometimes it gets stuck. Okay, just make sure it boots okay. Okay, that's good. All right, let's try this again. There we go, got the sensors coming through. So that can happen sometimes. The Arduino, after you've updated it, you just need to power cycle it explicitly, particularly if you're dealing with, you know, other peripherals, because the Bluetooth modem itself is kind of its own device, and we're communicating via serial, so anything could go wrong. And so what we've got here is we've got this this ultrasonic sensor currently reading the depth of the liquid. And so if I do something like this, it's not enough to move it. So let's see if I can... There we go. So there's a bit of penetration on the... Oh, well, there it's settled. So it takes a little bit of time sometimes to... the ultrasonic signal tends to bounce around a little bit, so you do get some bad reads on these things. So you've got to take the averages of the data. Okay, so we've got that telemetry coming through. That's all looks like it's working fine. No problems. Custom protocol end-to-end. So... where do we go from here? That was easy enough. We've done that. Well, sometimes you don't want to have to write your own protocol. You know, so we've got the Windows PC talking to the Arduino virus serial modem, and I've had to come up with the mechanism to send data backwards and forwards and deal with all of the sort of protocol stuff that you would normally have to do. Protocol design is a little bit of an art. The protocol I came up with is really simple, but if you want sort of two-way commanding and that kind of stuff, well, you're going to have to spend a bit of time developing that. And if you want to short-circuit that a little bit, you can use this technology called the Remote Wiring API, which is shipped by the Microsoft IoT team. Now, the Remote Wiring API, and I'll demo it shortly, is actually building upon an open-source project called the Fermata Protocol. The Fermata Protocol is derived from the MIDI standard. Is anyone familiar with any people, musicians or anything like that? A few people? So you're probably familiar with the MIDI standard, or at least devices that purport to be MIDI compatible. The Fermata protocol is built upon that standard and layers in some extra capabilities that make it easy for people to allow microcontrollers to talk to each other. The Fermata protocol is designed to be deployed onto things like an Arduino, but you can also run it on any device that can communicate serially. And it will work over Ethernet, it will work over a USB cable, and it'll even work over Bluetooth, and that's what we're going to be doing here. So let's have a look at it. So I've got, cut over to the other screen here. Okay. And we'll swap around to the other direction here. So this looks pretty similar, doesn't it? Same sort of device. There's actually a very subtle difference. The previous device, I had the Bluetooth modem plugged into pins 8 and 9 on the Arduino. On each Arduino, pin 0 and 1 is actually the default serial interface on these devices. And what you can actually do is plug the Bluetooth modem directly into that, deploy the Fermata firmware onto the device, and then use the remote wiring API from Microsoft to drive it directly. And you can do things like switch individual pins on and off remotely very easily. So let's have a look at it. Okay, so that's coming up. You should see. Okay, that's all good. Okay, now, what I'm going to try and do, it's going to be hard to see on the camera again, but we'll see how we go. What I'm going to do is I'm going to use a tool called the Windows Remote Arduino Experience. The Windows Remote Arduino Experience is an app you can download from the Microsoft Store, which is a really simple way of driving a device which has the Fermata protocol firmware deployed onto it. Just a way of debugging that you've got your wiring set up correctly. And then once we've done that, we'll jump into doing something a little bit more complicated with it. So replicating what we've got here with the custom sensor. So remote Arduino experience. Okay, so the remote Arduino experience, their UI is a little bit slicker than mine. You can see here that, thank you. I'm a slow learner, hey? This app here, this is the remote Arduino experience app. And what you can see here is you can select what kind of protocol you want to communicate, what sort of transport you want to communicate over, and what device you want to talk to. So I've got these devices paired already. And I'm going to use a low baud rate here just because of the way I've configured the modem over this side. But these modems can actually go much faster than that. It's just where I happen to set it. Hit connect, and what you'll notice on the other screen is see that little yellow light in there just on top of the modem? So that says that the remote Arduino experience code is now talking to this device. So we've got a connection established, a serial connection established. And I won't show you the screen over here, but basically I've got a toggle over here which allows me to turn on a particular pin. So if I rotate this a certain direction and press it over here, we should see an LED go on, an LED go off on the Arduino. Okay, so that's the remote Arduino experience driving an Arduino device that has the Fermata deployed. And it's using, under the covers, it's using exactly the same principles that we use to develop the custom protocol, but it's just using this standard Fermata protocol that a lot of people are using. So what is the standard Fermata protocol? So let's drop out of that. And sorry? Question? Okay. So what I've got here is another project which contains the Fermata firmware. I'm actually going to drop into the main Arduino IDE for the time being. So the simplest way to deploy the Arduino firmware is to go into the Arduino IDE and go examples. You can see down here that you've got Fermata, and you just deploy the standard Fermata. So all of this code here is basically driving this package that's available under an open source project. And I won't go through every single line of code. I'll just give you some idea of the magnitude of the sketch that someone else has developed for you that does all this hard work. I've got that exact same code I've got that code as a basis for some other firmware that I've developed. So if I go into the sensor firmware with Fermata protocol, you notice the convention I'm using here. I've got a sketch which contains the same code. But what I've done is I've actually added some customizations. So if I go into SysX callback, what I've done is created a command called the ultrasonic distance query, where I basically go off and do the same thing that my other firmware does, and it just basically responds back with the distance continuously. So I'll send a Fermata command across the wire to trigger this process, and this thing will just send back a distance string to the device. Okay, so it's doing exactly the same thing. And we'll talk about where you might use Fermata protocol versus building your own, and there's a few pros and cons for those. But the reason I have to do some customizations to the standard protocol is that these ultrasonic sensors are extremely timing sensitive. So if I send a pulse for 10 microseconds, well, if I'm waiting for latency to turn that pin on and turn that pin off, it's not going to work within 10 microseconds. It's going to take longer than that. So I have to write custom code that's running on the Arduino, which has been triggered by this SysX protocol callback. Okay. So the next thing that we need to do to make this all work together is use the remote wiring API. The remote wiring API comes in the form of a NuGet package, which you can install into a Universal Windows app. And it provides you a kind of a convenient wrapper for working with the Fermata device. So what I've got here is a read using the Fermata protocol project. It's almost identical to the other one, in that what we do is we start capturing the readings. But what we do is we go through this process of establishing a Bluetooth serial connection. So this is all part of the remote wiring API. And then because I'm using a custom SysX command, I have to use the lower level UWP Fermata class, which allows me to send a specific SysX command. If I didn't need to do a custom SysX command, there is the remote device class here actually has a whole bunch of methods to do things like digital write. And you can actually just say, hey, turn on an individual pin. But I'm not driving the pins directly, I'm sending a custom SysX command. If you're starting a project where you don't have any timing sensitive stuff, UWP Fermata is gold. It really gets you moving quickly. Once I've got the device connected, a series of events are fired. So as soon as the Fermata connection is detected, I'm going to send back a SysX command, that distance query, and then I'm going to wait for another event that comes back with the string, which is the distance reading that we should be getting. So now if I start this up, and hopefully I haven't broken all of this. Okay. So I'll let that run. Okay, it looks like we've got a distance reading coming back. And if I look at this again, you can see that you've got the yellow LED there on the screen indicating that we've got a serial connection established. And what's actually happening here is that it's getting the distance reading. So, or at least it should be, unless I've accidentally unplugged something. Maybe I've got a breakpoint somewhere. Let's try that again. On one of these sensors, I've got a loose wire which results in the distance reading hanging. So let's just, there we go. There we go, it's working. So you can see there that that's using the Fermata protocol to shunt the data backwards and forwards. So it's a little bit more involved, but useful if you just want to drive an Arduino quickly. Yep. Okay. No worries. Okay. Okay, so where are we? So in order to use the remote wiring API, that's the package that you need to download and install into your UWP application. And it just drops all the dependencies in, works fine, and then you just use those APIs that I've got. And I'll share out the URL for this, the source code I've got here, so you can all go and dig into it yourselves. And so that's how we've read the sensor. So we've got our sensor, and we're kind of working on the gateway at the moment. But of course, if you're deploying, let's say you've got a bunch of tanks on your property, water tanks on your property, you're not going to go and leave your Surface Pro 3 out in the field there to drive these sensors, right? You want to have some kind of low-cost gateway that supports connectivity back to the internet. And so you need to come up with something to support that. So this is where Windows IoT comes in. So it's a more capable platform. You know, you've got a full-blown Windows environment in terms of the Universal Windows platform. And you can do things like IP connectivity, crypto, that kind of stuff. Anything you can do in Windows UWP, you can do on this device for the most part. So let's actually have a look at running this same UWP application on this Raspberry Pi. So I'll look at what I've got set up on the desk here. Okay, so on the desk here, I've got a Raspberry Pi. It's a vanilla Raspberry Pi. There's no custom wiring on it. It's got power. It's got an Ethernet connection in this case. It's also got, there is a Bluetooth dongle for the Raspberry Pi. That's a Wi-Fi dongle as well, but we're not using that for this. But we are using this to connect to these devices. And so this is kind of proof that you can take the same code and just rely on Windows to provide that abstraction for you. The next proof is actually I'm going to take the code that I've got running on my Windows PC here and just actually start running on the Raspberry Pi without any changes. Okay? So, we've got the. I'm going to go back to the custom protocol version, and you'll notice up here, when I hit run, I'm running on a local machine. One of the things you can do is debug a device remotely, and so I'm going to say that I'm going to work with a remote machine. Before I can do that, I need to log on to this machine and just make sure it's configured correctly. So this Raspberry Pi is a Windows box which you can remotely administer. There's a few tools to help you figure that out. So if I go into, where's the IoT watcher that I'm missing? Where is it? I don't know. Never remember the path. So I'm going to start up. There's the IoT watcher. I'll open the file location and I'll just launch it. So this is a little tool that scans your local network for IoT devices. And so you can see here that on this network segment, I've got a little switch here that everything's plugged into. I've got a MinWin PC. And that's just the default host name for a minimal deployment of Windows when it's kind of in that bootstrapping mode, and it gives me the IP address. Now, what I can actually do here is I can right mouse click on that line, and I can browse to this URL. And so, I type in the password. So there's a default password for this thing. Okay, and so this little web application is actually running on the Raspberry Pi. Okay, there's a little web server built into it, and it allows me to do some basic administrative work. So, for example, I can go and change the host name and the username and password, set time zones, that kind of stuff. I can even get it to force up a particular application. So there's a bunch of applications that come pre-deployed. So if I plug this into a HDMI port right now, which I won't, it would actually show up a UWP application. It's the default bootstrap app. And you can install applications remotely using this mechanism. You can jump in and you can have a bit of a process list. You can go and kill off processes, so if you've got something running on there that's a bit rogue. And you can even get some performance information, which is useful because the other day I tried to play a video on the Raspberry Pi inside a UWP application, which was the wrong codec, or at least one that wasn't well supported on the Raspberry Pi. And the CPU is just getting hammered constantly. So this is a good way of logging in and seeing what's going on. Wouldn't it be nice to actually get these features on a standard Windows box sometimes? I think this should ship out of the box with Windows. Okay, and then you've got some basic debugging capabilities. So you can download a dump. You can look at the various drivers which are installed. And you can even configure Bluetooth. So I was talking earlier about some of the issues you can have when you're working with Bluetooth on the Raspberry Pi. What I've done on this device is I've actually prepared this particular sensor with the Raspberry Pi. And you can see it's picking up someone else's sensor here, as someone else's device. Is that a Fitbit or something like that? Fitbit One, something like that? Yep. This room's probably got 100 devices that are talking Bluetooth, so there's possibly some range issues here. But anyway, this is useful for figuring out how you're currently wired up and even what your networking configuration is. But if you want to go and do things like pair to a particular Bluetooth device, well, then one of the things you need to do is do that pairing explicitly. And so we're going to SSH into a machine, into the Raspberry Pi. So there's two ways to connect to a Raspberry Pi remotely to issue kind of commands. I'm going to show you PowerShell initially, and we'll get that going, and then I'll go and use SSH as well. So I'm going to enter a PowerShell, remote PowerShell session. And credentials. So I'm going to connect to that. And this will take a little while to negotiate the session. So whilst that's doing that, I'm going to also start up an SSH connection. Okay, which is very useful. So it'll just take a few moments to do the protocol negotiation. Remember, it's a pretty low-end machine. It's got 64 mega RAM. It's not a hugely fast processor, although it's amazing that it can run Windows, actually. It's pretty impressed. Okay, let's see how PowerShell's going. PowerShell's still negotiating. Party's still going. Fortunately, you only have to do this once. Okay, getting there. Whilst we're waiting for that, any questions so far? What you've seen? Thoughts, concerns? No?
Why don't we do this just direct from a Raspberry Pi and work? What's the use case for the Arduino?
Good, really good question, actually. So the question was, why don't we do this directly on the Raspberry Pi? So the Raspberry Pi, you know, it's a, in the world of microcontrollers, it's a very powerful machine, right? But one of the things it lacks is the real-time processing speed to do things like ultrasonic sensor reading. So people have tried to do things like bit banging to figure out the width of the pulse coming back from the ultrasonic sensor, but it's a bit unreliable. So what you find people do is they combine a Raspberry Pi with some kind of crust that slaps on top, which gives you that lower-level microcontroller capability. Who knows, one day they might come out with a Raspberry Pi that has that fully integrated, but currently if you want to do certain operations, analog operations, you need a faster processor to do the sampling on the pulse.
Is that why C-sharp now doesn't support microseconds?
I wouldn't know the answer to that. I'm not sure if that's, I mean, C-sharp was designed for a purpose, for a kind of application, you know. But, you know, really, you know, C is the language that people use on microcontrollers. So, any other questions while we wait? Has it come back yet? Ah, there we go. Okay, so you can see PowerShell's dropped in the back, and I'm also going to log in with... I think I typed in the wrong password there. Oh, no, that's right. Okay, so to get pairing working, you need to go IoT, Bluetooth... pairing, okay, and this is a command line tool. This actually doesn't work over PowerShell, so this is why I've got the SSH session here. If you do this on PowerShell, the keyboard navigation doesn't work too well. So what you can do here is you can get a list of all the pairable devices that the Bluetooth device can see. You can see here that I've got this one that I've already got paired, and I've got another one that I've got pairable. If I press zero here, if I said P to pair and typed in 9E86, it would actually get me to type in the PIN for this device. And so it's now successfully prepared. So this Raspberry Pi is now connected to both devices. I'm only going to use one for my demo. So let's exit that. Exit, there we go. And just to prove, you got PowerShell here. Pretty amazing, so it's useful. Okay, close that down. Okay, so now you can see here on the paired devices I've got two, and now I'm going to launch this application, but this time I'm going to run it on the Raspberry Pi. So the first thing I do is I select remote machine, and it hasn't detected the remote machine automatically, so what I'm going to do is punch in the IP address of the someone else has deployed a Raspberry Pi into the network, so hopefully we're not going to run into each other here. Just select. And I will set a breakpoint here just to prove that we get this thing off and we can hit a breakpoint. We can debug the code on the Raspberry Pi directly. And then I'll get to getting some code to push some sensor telemetry up to Azure IoT Suite. So we're deploying code. It can take a little bit of time to deploy this stuff onto the Raspberry Pi. You know, it's not a super fast device, so it's not going to be as responsive as developing locally. And that's one of the nice things about using the UWP platform is that you can do a lot of the development on your local machine because the APIs are compatible. It's only once you start doing things that you can't do on the Raspberry Pi that things come unstuck. So here's a trap for young players. You've got to make sure that you set the processor architecture for the device to the right setting. Okay, let's try that again. Deploying to the device, copying the files over. So now the code's running, and notice I'm getting all the diagnostic information coming back over the session. And with a little bit of time, my breakpoint should get hit. It does take a little bit of time. No. Demo file. Okay, I'm not sure what's going on there. Okay, let me just jump to another piece of code that I've got. Okay, so this is similar code. This code does, I'm going to run this on the Raspberry Pi as well, but I'm going to run it first on my local PC. So this code is very similar in that it's got the same code to read the distance off the microcontroller via Bluetooth, but it's also got some code that talks to an Azure IoT event hub. Which is actually part of an Azure IoT Suite deployment, and we'll look at that in a second. But I'm just going to run this just to make sure it's running locally, and then we've got some telemetry coming through, and then I'm going to log into Azure IoT Suite, and then we'll deploy the code back onto the Raspberry Pi. Okay, so we've got the sensor working. That's all good. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump into Azure IoT Suite. My connectivity is good. All right. So Azure IoT Suite is a way of provisioning a whole bunch of Azure services which are pre-configured to solve a particular problem. So currently it supports deploying a remote monitoring solution, and in the future you'll be able to do things like predictive maintenance, kind of like a really quick way of getting a proof of concept up and running, which you can then tweak to get what you want. So I'm going to launch one of the things that I've already deployed, which is a remote monitoring solution. I need to sign into that. So it's a freestanding portal, which is deployed as part of the solution, which then plugs into Azure AD automatically. And you can see here that I've got two devices. I've got one in North America and I've got one in Australia. And if I look at the device here, what I've done is I've hotwired the distance sensor to come through on the humidity reading on the particular IoT suite deployment. And so if I hold my hand under there, we'll see that the average starts coming down as the telemetry starts streaming through, assuming it's still streaming through. Okay, it's still coming through. So you can see the average is now starting to come down. All right, so that's going from this device to my Windows PC up to Azure IoT Suite via IoT Hub. So that'll keep dropping down as I leave my hand there. And one of the things just to note, we're sort of sending through as telemetry every second. Depending on your link speed, you might want to go a little bit less than this. It causes this to refresh, which is why that graph's not there the whole time. It's just constantly refreshing all the time and pulling all the data back. So just a tip there. Okay, so let's take that exact same code and deploy it onto the Raspberry Pi. And hopefully this time everything works fine. What I might do is just power cycle the Raspberry Pi just in case I've managed to stuff something up. So I'm just taking the power out, plugging it back in. Give it a little bit of time to boot. Well, you can issue things like shutdown commands because it's a Windows PC, right? So you can do it like a restart. I'd assume those commands are there in the shell. Okay. So it's still be coming back up. Communicating on the network. Okay, hopefully I haven't shot myself in the foot here. Okay, well that's a start. So let's jump onto the device and just get its IP address. I actually want the IPv4 address, if you're wondering why I didn't take it off there. Yeah, I was just thinking that. 36. I found that sometimes the IoT watcher can take a while to actually find the devices. So just a tip. Okay, so I've got the remote machine, it's set for ARM. Punch in the IP address. Should all be good. Hit run. A breakpoint set. Okay. Okay, so we've got our breakpoint. So now we're debugging a Raspberry Pi remotely via the network. And what we're going to do is we're going to go through and send that telemetry up to Azure IoT Suite. So I'll walk through the code here. We create a client which connects to the IoT Suite. And before you can actually send telemetry and have it received, you actually have to send this device metadata packet up to IoT Suite via IoT Event Hub. So you can find out what this structure looks like in the device simulator code for IoT Suite. So they have a simulator that generates traffic. So you just cut and paste this out and then adjust it for what you want. This is just a big anonymous object that I'm sending through, and plus a bunch of commands that I support. Serialize that to a string and then send it as an event. All right, and that sort of says, okay, I'm here. And then what we're going to do is in a loop, we're just going to push in the telemetry. So what I'm going to do is set a breakpoint here, hit continue, and that packet will get sent up, assuming the Raspberry Pi can route to the internet. Should be right. Okay, working. So it's a little bit slower. If it's going to reach it yet. Where are we? Okay, well, whilst I'm waiting for that to get to its breakpoint, which I thought I would have hit by now, but set a breakpoint there, stop it, and launch it again. It's possible something else is killing the application. In fact, I noticed it's not actually it is connecting to the Bluetooth, so I've noticed that it's connected over here, and I'm just waiting for it to do that initial negotiation with IoT Suite to get the data up there, but I could actually have some connectivity issues on the Raspberry Pi. All right, so I'll let that keep running, and we'll just continue on. We'll wait until it finds its breakpoint. So what we end up with here is the Raspberry Pi as a gateway, as a field gateway, pushing into IoT Suite on the back end. And IoT Suite just allows you to push events. And the tool that you're actually integrating with on the device is a thing called IoT Hub, which is provisioned as part of an IoT Suite instance. And so that's what you end up with as your finished architecture. So whilst I'm waiting for that to finish processing, it still hasn't reached its breakpoint yet, I don't think. So I'd say something's going wrong. Or something's going very slowly. Questions, tips, and tricks. So anyone have any questions so far? I've got a few things to discuss, but if you've got some questions, I'm happy to answer them. Raspberry Pi versus Arduino. So I've sort of answered that. It's really about getting that low-level timing capability, so you can talk to some sensors. So your final solutions will probably end up with a combination of components. Fermata or not Fermata? I find that Fermata is great for the quick start, but I find that if you're doing a lot of custom stuff, which is very timing sensitive, well then you probably end up writing a lot of custom code anyway, so it can be easier just to manually do it. IoT Suite versus IoT Hub. So IoT Suite is a big suite of capability, right? And it deploys a pre-configured solution for remote monitoring, right? It's got like a map and graphs and device registration, a whole bunch of capabilities. But you don't have to use the whole IoT suite. You can actually just use IoT Hub. So if you don't have a remote monitoring requirement, you don't configure IoT Suite. What you would configure is an IoT Hub to manage the device integration piece of what you want to do, but then build custom code on the back end to do everything else. But keep an eye out for the suites that are coming out from Microsoft, because they might give you a head start. So we've got a predictive maintenance one coming out, which will help in those kind of scenarios. And so with that, I thought I'd stop there. I think, I'm not sure how I'm going for time, I'm probably pretty close to time. So if you've got any questions, feel free to come up and ask. I'm going to be at the speaker's lounge after this, so if you want to come and have a chat to me, we can sketch some things out on the table there, feel free. Otherwise, thank you very much for coming along.
Just getting out. Yeah, my life is safe. children's tale belong somewhere of a lion's roar. I'm sorry. but the writing's on the wall. This time next year will be no more. Say we gave it all. We ain't over, but the writing's on the wall.